I do not have the science or art to be a funeral director. Okay? I can't get hands to stay correctly. I can't match Pantones or fluids in any way, shape, or form. It wasn't in me.
But you got the charisma. You got that funeral director charisma.
Well, I mean, that was the thing. They're like, you can talk to anybody, and you do.
Ryan, how are you? You know everyone in the funeral industry. You're like the funeral guy. Everyone knows you. You know everyone. What do you want to talk about today?
Let's talk about the weather. That's why everybody chimes in, right? Let's talk about how crazy the weather is.
Yes, we love talking about the weather. Thankfully, as funeral directors, we don't have to go through all that BS that a lot of corporations do, where they have the 5 minutes of warm-up talking about the weather, talking about the traffic or whatever it is. I love that we all can just get together and we know each other's vibe and you just go right into it. You don't have to do all that stuff. So it's a very good point. But for anyone that doesn't know, Ryan previously came from a family funeral home in Chicago. Come on, you got to love him already. And he's bounced around a ton of different places throughout the funeral industry. I'm sure you've seen him at a ton of trade shows. Ryan, tell us a little bit about maybe like the beginning of your career. What was it like getting started? And then we could kind of go on from there and see what kind of nonsense you got yourself into.
Yeah. So I actually started off just helping out around the funeral home as a little kid, you know, filling candy dishes, picking up trash, the stuff that, you know, kids under 10 could do. And then they got me a lawn mowing job over at St. Joe's Cemetery, which is just on the other side of River Grove.
I've been there many times.
Yeah, yep. Thatcher and Cumberland right there. Did that for a while. Just according to my uncle, I had to cut my teeth and earn my bones. Those are the phrases he used. as I got older, it was like, okay, you know, your uncle and myself, because it was my great uncle and uncle who owned that business. They're like, we're going to go ahead and we want to start getting you ready to become a funeral director. So, you know, sitting in on arrangements and starting off at Worsham. And we learned very quickly, I do not have the science or art to be a funeral director. Okay? I can't get hands to stay correctly. I can't match Pantones or fluids in any way, shape, or form. It wasn't in me.
But you got the charisma. You got that funeral director charisma.
Well, I mean, that was the thing. They're like, you can talk to anybody, and you do. We need you to shut up sometimes. So try this. And he puts a phone book in front of me on my 18th birthday.
Okay.
He's like, start calling. And I'm like, to do what? He's like, just start calling and invite them in to talk about preneed. And I set 4 appointments for that weekend on my 18th birthday.
And no kidding. Like,
this is you. You're in sales. You are not a funeral director. We're going to go this route instead.
Wow. That is a cool getting tossed into the fire there. And awesome that your family just gave you that opportunity and you learned real quick. Did you ever get any experiences like in the prep room? Like give me a story from when you were going through and the struggle that you had to go through to find out that you were actually a salesman, not a mortician.
So if this dates us, because we're talking the 90s,
okay,
we had a gravity embalming.
No kidding.
The only reason why there was a second floor on the building was so we could do gravity embalming in the basement.
Whoa. Wow. Okay. So you were the holder.
I was the holder. The one time he let me set a pick line, I couldn't find an artery. I couldn't find a vein. I couldn't find anything. The blind leading, and I'm man enough to admit, you know, I've sat on both sides of the table. I'm probably the world's worst funeral director. And I can admit that, which is why I didn't finish at Worsham. It's fair.
Yep. Well, thankfully, not literally on both sides of the table there. So you literally, you would have the gravity, because I've never seen it in person. So it was just a long tube that came from the second level. You just have to run up the stairs.
Goes down through the first level, shoots down to the basement where we had the prep room. And it's so literally, you have one shot, right? Because if you mess up, you got to go up two flights of stairs and start all over.
That's bizarre. That's some 1920s nonsense that you were doing.
I mean, suffice it to say, Uncle Frank wasn't, he was frugal. Let's say that. He was very frugal.
Yeah, he couldn't. I bet you he was making his own fluids too. He was mixing them up in the bathroom, the flower room or something.
I don't want to know, but I tell you, the one time he let me drink the wine he made, I was good for years.
That's great. So what happened after that then? So you found out that, yeah, sales is for me. What happened after that?
So they decided, you know, well, you got to get a college education then. So yeah. I was going to go to University of Illinois. I was going to walk onto the football team there.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, during our third warm-up game, we had the Bowling Green team come in and we were playing sevens. And yeah. I got tried out on special teams because, you know, I used to weigh 476 pounds. I was massive.
You're a big dog.
Big, big dog. They put me a second line blocker. The kicker squibs it. It bounces, hits me in the chest. I look. Nobody's behind me.
No.
The sideline is run, fat boy, run.
You're running at home?
I start trucking. Someone comes and gets me. I stiff arm him. My hand goes through his visor. My knee goes this way. My body goes that way. I slip my ACL straight north, and that was
it. That's it.
That was it. That's so it. I ended up transferring to U of I at Chicago. I got a double bachelor's in poli
sci. Right by where you're from, right?
Yeah, yeah. It literally, they replaced where I was born into
UIC, the college. Yeah.
That was the South Campus. So I got both my bachelor's there. Then I got my MBA from the Lewitaud School at UIC. And then I went to University of Phoenix to get my master's in management because I wanted to come do all the business stuff. Well, we sold. We sold to Alderwoods before I finished college.
Right. So what was that like? So your whole plan was to come back and run it as more of a business. And what was that with your family? How did it go?
So both my uncles' name were Frank, senior and junior, right? Senior got sick. We weren't ready for it. And junior wasn't ready to take over the business. He also didn't want to take over the business. He didn't like the funeral director portion. He is probably one of the best embalmers I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Okay? But he didn't want to take it over. Well, Alderwoods made an offer that we couldn't refuse.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, you know what? Washed our hands, took the money. Everybody got out, you know, they got a massive cut. I got to pay for my college degree. So I'm extremely grateful for that.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah.
And then SCI came in and they bought Alderwoods, and had we known that was going to happen, might've hold out, you know, a couple more months, but
no kidding.
Blessing, no matter what you slice it.
Yeah. It's nuts that stuff happens all the time. You don't know what the family dynamic's going to be, and someone comes in and gives you that offer. It's like, hey, you got to do what you got to do. It's a business, and it's a hard business, but we could all stand from running it more like a business and less like a family. Or you know, it's that thing I noticed throughout the industry, and I feel like we're getting way better at it, but running it more meticulously and more methodically as opposed to just keeping it like a family, because everything used to be, it was all family funeral homes, and now it's shifted a little bit away and you give outside people. So I think it's getting up to times, but that's something that I've noticed that continues to be improved, and it needs to take leaps and bounds more so too.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think, you know, we're in this weird generational dynamic where the boomers are starting to come on their way out, and it's either the millennials or Gen X that are taking over. And those are three completely psychological and technological dynamics.
Yes.
You know, if it were my Uncle Frank sitting here, he'd be like, nope, you're getting flowers and a rosary, nothing else.
Yep.
If it was Frank Jr. sitting here, is like, no, we're going to do catering because I know I make money from Maria's Mexican restaurant right across the street. Right.
Right. Right.
If it's me, it's no. What does the family want? Let's do that.
Yeah.
Completely different dynamics.
It sure is. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes and what firms adopt and don't adopt. Maybe a mixture of the later two, I would say, probably is better. But I think that personalization is now everything. And that's where people are going to see our value. Unfortunately, it's not as much in the behind the scenes work we do that people don't understand or see the value. As much as I think we're trying to educate the public now more, because people ask that, like I just had a conversation this past week with a family friend of mine, and they didn't know too much about how the funeral industry worked and what I did. So they were asking, like, why are funerals so expensive? Like, I had a cremation for my mom and dad, and it cost X amount. And I described it as, people don't understand the work that goes behind the scenes. We need to be available 24/7, 365. That's one thing right there. We have all of our staffing that needs to get covered, all of the overhead that needs to be covered, especially if we have like a larger funeral home that actually has a piece of property. All that stuff, like, it needs to come from somewhere. It frustrates me sometimes, and it should, and I should take a deep breath. But when people don't understand why the prices are what they are, you're going to pay $100,000 from a wedding, but you're not okay with spending $2,000 on a direct cremation for your loved one. I could go on a tangent about that stuff, but I'll let you hear what you have to say.
No, that's fair, especially when they don't realize that our industry is FTC regulated. You know, there's also so many nuances, and then licenses, and then antitrust situations. I mean, you talk about the MPS scandal that happened, or you talk about what happened down there off Cicero, that cemetery in Chicago. I can't think of the name of it. Help me, where they were fake cremating.
I'm the North Sider. Come on.
All right. Well, it was 190 Cicero.
I won't name names, but I do know.
So you know what I'm talking about down there. I do. I mean, it's all of this stuff that not only protects the families, but it also protects all the operators. Because all it takes is one mistake. You know, we get one shot at everything we do. That's it. You get one chance to bury, one chance for a funeral, one chance for a cremation, one chance, you know, it's, I can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. There are people who get married 15 times. You know?
It's true. And we can't make a mistake. There is not one little error that can be tolerated. It's not allowed.
No. You get two cross outs on your paperwork. Third one, rip it up and start over.
Yep.
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, you talk about having to be, you know, almost flawless at all times.
Yeah.
And think about it, because we normally function within the communities that we are also working in. You know, we live in them. I lived, 10 minutes from the funeral home.
Yep.
If I got lippy, you know, as a rude high schooler, because I had a crappy game on Friday night, and I walk into Caputo's and I start mouthing off in the produce section.
Yeah.
This is what they're raising over there. I don't want to go talk to him, you know, and it can cause all sorts of turmoil.
It does. And it's that family thing that you're literally showcasing your business through your children and the rest, even your extended family, if they're in the specific area that you're in. So that's something that I've thought about, but not so much that you need to be on 24/7. There's no room for error, because it will negatively impact your actual business if you're in your local community. It's a very good point.
Mm-hmm. Just food for thought. That's all. Just throwing.
I like it.
Oop, that's a death call here. Hold on just a second. All right, I think the students got it. I'm sorry about that. You know, we've been seeing a lot more business come in ever since we started mortuary marketing. And I got to tell you, all the funeral homes we work with, they're saying the same thing. So what do? We run ads on Google and other similar sites that get directed at families that need a funeral home in your area. It then brings them to a page that we've designed for you that gets the family to call you to inquire for your services. It's really increased our volume big time. It's working for my funeral home, and I think most parlors could really benefit from its uses. I put a bunch of information in the podcast description. Go check it out. I'm always happy to help talk with you and answer any questions you might have. All right, let's get back to our morbid discussion.
So what happened after that? So you got your degrees, your family sold, and you're out of luck. What happens?
So with a poli-sci degree and an MBA in 2008, you could probably imagine, especially an econ degree, there really wasn't a lot of work around the housing bubble crisis. So mm-hmm. I got a job doing private security, and I was working for a nightclub group known as Spy Chicago, which owned Spy Bar, which is still in Chicago, and Sound Bar, and they're all those ones over on Franklin Avenue.
Yeah, I know.
Made great money doing it. Lots of tips, lots of professional athletes and singers, you know, all sorts of celebrities. One day, things went really bad. I won't give you all the gory details, but there were 16 ambulances called at the end of this night. Me thinking that I'm the toughest person in the world, I just drove home. I woke up the next morning, I couldn't feel my legs. In the scuffle, I ended up rupturing 8 discs in my spine, my entire lumbar, my T8, my C2, C3, C4.
Holy crap.
3 surgeries on my neck, got that repaired. I refused to do it on my back. And the chief surgeon at the time of Loyola, the chief surgeon for the Bears and the workers' comp doc, all said I'd never walk again. I told them two very choice words. I bet you can guess what they were. Most of my family is military, and my sister was finishing her AIT out in Hawaii. She's like, just come live with me and just stay here and figure it out. So I moved out to Hawaii for 13 months.
Hey, there are worse things.
I went up to Waimea Falls, which is the healing waterfalls in Oahu. And every day while she was at work, I walked in the ocean. I walked in the waterfall. I basically just did water walking, ended up shredding off about 100 pounds.
Wow.
I'm still here, man. I'm still here and I'm good.
That's a great story. That's super cool. You got to tell me a little bit what happened. Come on. You got to tell me something.
My client, who I still have a signed NDA, I cannot say who he was, but he got in a fight with a person much younger than him, much more healthy than him, over whose Ed Hardy V-neck was the correct depth. Remember those, the Ed Hardy and Affliction shirts? So he starts poking in this kid's chest, who's probably 25, 6% body fat.
Yeah.
Boom, knocks him out cold. So, of course, I have to get in. I'm calling for backup. I'm fighting this guy. Second guy comes in, hits me in the back of the head with a bottle of Grey Goose. And unlike in the movies, the bottles don't break.
No, they don't.
As I'm falling, I throw my arm. I catch him. He falls over my client, who's passed out on the floor. He hits his head on the bar. He's out. Nobody's coming to help. I'm screaming for backup in the walkie-talkie. I pull it off. It separated. The whole cord, the battery was out. There's nothing. So now the third guy comes up. We're going, you know, punch for punch. I'm dazed and confused. I get lucky again. He falls backwards over unconscious client whose name I'm not going to say.
Uh-huh.
He grabs my tie.
Okay.
I go with him. I land on my knuckles. They're all still broken. They never
Yeah, dang.
I can crack these all day. I ended up tearing my rotator cuff in my labrum. And then on the fall, that's probably when I did the C2, C3, C4. When I picked up my client, my entire back popped, carried him up the stairs. My guys came over to help. We shoved him in the back of his Bentley. He left. These three guys come back out. Well, now we're on Franklin. We're like, listen, just no violence. It was work. Across the street is a rival gang. They get into it. We get in the crossfire. All hell breaks loose. And
holy crap.
We got 25 there. I mean, we got police there. We got two districts backing them up. Ambulance. It was bad. It was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Dang. That's just horrible. Horrifying.
Stay away from River North after midnight. Nothing good happens, man.
No doubt about it. My cousin is a bouncer. He's more in like just north of downtown. For you would know, but like the Old Town Gold Coast area, he does a bunch of restaurants, right? So we were out one night and we saw my cousin in his shirt and tie, and he's sprinting on the street, and we run over to him. We're like, Tommy, he's a professional boxer, right? And we're like, Tommy, what's going on? Like, what are you doing over here? And like, you know, we were drunk and we're like, whatever. Right. And he's like, oh guys, like, it's so great to see you, but like, someone just skipped out on their bill and I'm trying to chase them down right now. I got to go. It was epic. It was too funny. Oh, man. Okay. So naturally, you pivoted after that. So Hawaii got healed, the healing waters. And then what goes on after that?
I moved back here. I'm still looking for a job. I enrolled in the University of Phoenix to get my master's in management because I wanted to be versatile, right?
Sure.
And I knew I needed to keep working out. So I talked myself, or I talked them, into giving me an interview at Lifetime Fitness.
Yeah.
I got hired as the assistant member services person because I wanted to work out there, but I didn't want to pay $75 a month, right? That's the whole reason. And the general manager's like, hey, you got the gift for gab. You ever think about sales? I'm like, I need a salary. They're like, it's 100% commission, but you could do well. I took the leap of faith. I went for it. I did very well.
Nice.
And then, you know,
were you selling memberships or personal training?
100% member. I definitely didn't look like a personal trainer. I still don't look like a personal trainer, but they were selling memberships and they're like, hey, we have a promotion opportunity. You can go out to Overland Park, Kansas, where your old boss is, or you can go to Ajax or Apex, North Carolina, where you know no one. I'm like, well, that's an easy sell. Take me where I know someone.
Right.
Came out here. you know, had the time of my life, set a whole bunch of records, ended up, you know, meeting the woman who would give me my daughter, and ended up meeting a regional vice president of sales for SCI, who was one of my members who became a very close friend. He's like, you work 14, 15 hours a day, 7 days a week for what, $100,000 a year? If you're doing these type of sales with me, you can make way more working a 9-to-5 and do something where you're helping people on the worst day of their life.
Yeah.
I took the plunge, and SCI was, I mean, what a great, I loved working for them. I loved almost everybody who I saw there, helping people, yeah, growing people, taking a losing location and making it into, you know, 80% of the team got Century Club my first year there. It was awesome. And
very cool. You know,
so many great relationships from the C-suite down, just a whole bunch of friends. I loved it.
That's awesome. It's funny how the funeral industry just always brings you back in. If you got that in you, it always has a way. That's for sure. So how long were you there, and what happened after that?
So I was SCI Kansas City for a short while, maybe like a year and a half, 2 years. Then was at Houston for like a week, and then they sent me up to Chicago to run their PPA team. Turned that around, did well, and I was actually at a crossroads. I didn't know what to do because there was a promotion on the table for me in Chicago. Well, keep in mind, my daughter's still here. I'd been gone for 8 months. And I drove back every weekend to see her. I would leave Friday morning, drive the 7.5 hours, be here with my personal car. I mean, I put I want to say it was like 39,000 miles on my car in a matter of months.
My goodness.
It was a lease. but Thumbies reaches out to me and they're like, we need somebody who knows the funeral industry, know when the company does. We need someone to take over sales and kind of be our chief sales officer, chief of staff. Went in within a year. We had started the discussion about, you know, selling to Bass Mullet. When that was kind of there, it was like, all right, time to transition out. I left Thumbies, and then this is where I get blurry. I think I went to J3 Tech for a while, Johnson Consulting's tech company, which ended up doing a full revamp. I forget who runs those now. And then I was with Stonemore, which is now Everstory, of course, overseeing the West, working for Bob Page, who's an awesome mentor. We sold all of my properties, and I'm like, you know, wow, I'm gonna leave the industry for a while. I went to Legal Tech for 10 months. I hate Legal Tech. I hate legal. I hate SaaS. Yeah. That's not because it's not like us, you know, here, yeah, we care about our people. And yeah, then, I had two opportunities on the table. I'll only mention the one I took, but, sure, I went out to North Carolina to interview with George and Carl at Funeral Home Gifts. And the second I walked in, I'm like, all right, we've got, you know, two guys who are a little bit older than me. They both have MBAs just like I do. They're both single dads just like I am. It's a family-run business like I know. He knows every single person who works for him by the first name. We're doing something to help with grief. We're doing something to help funeral homes. We're doing something to help cemeteries. I want to be here.
That's right up your alley.
Yeah, so there was no chance I wasn't going to fight for that job.
That's awesome. That's great. And how's it been going so far with them? How have you enjoyed it?
Yo, I love it. You know, I love it. I get to see all of my friends again at the shows. So that's always the first thing. And, you know, we're known as the blanket guys. You know, nobody knows that it's Funeral Home Gifts. Some companies think that we're our parent company, which is Pure Country Weavers, which has been around for 40 years. but it's nice because at NFDA, you know, get to make new connections, be like, hey, here's the blanket. You know, the blanket. Here's the other versions. Here's a Sherpa blanket. Here's our urn. Did you know we have this urn, which is the only one in the industry that can do this? And it's just opening up their minds in new ways to serve families. And it's awesome. I love it.
Tell us a little bit about it. For anyone that doesn't know what Funeral Home Gifts is, like, give us a rundown of what you do. Give me your best sales pitch.
So Funeral Home Gifts, which has been around for about 16 years, owned by our parent company, Pure Country Weavers, which has been around for 40 years, is the foremost tapestry maker in the entire world. We produce woven blankets primarily made 100% in the United States of America in Tryon, North Carolina. We can customize any of our products fully to whatever you want. Signatures, pictures, you name it, we can put it on there with over 19,000 various combinations of graphic art and backgrounds.
Wow.
Everything that we do, if an order is received by 2:30 Eastern time, will arrive at your location next day. It's ready.
That's awesome. For the industry, that's the key, because you don't know those quick turnarounds, they'll get you. And that's what you need to be able to do. That's awesome. What is your, keep going. Sorry.
No. So we're known as the blanket guys, right? That's our yeah. that's our bread and butter. We're the only ones who can weave a blanket in 15 minutes flat, right? And get it to you next day. We also have our Sherpa blankets, which are soft and have more vibrant colors. They cost a little bit more. They're not as large, but it's just a different texture and a different way to honor them. The coolest thing that we have, in my opinion, and I don't want to down talk our ties or our pillows or our cap panels, which are fantastic, or our acrylics, but we do this urn.
Good and plug of all that, though. Nice.
Our urn, our universal urn, and we call it the 946A because it's 9x4x6, is the only urn I've ever seen in my entire life that is can be fully personalized on four sides. Okay. It has NASA grade aluminum and marine grade polyfibers at top and bottom. It's airtight. It can be delivered next day. It costs less than every other urn in the industry. It can be buried in the ground without an outer burial container. It can be submerged in water and for water burial without an outer burial container. It can be shot into space if you want an astral burial without an outer burial container. And it still looks gorgeous in a glass front niche or on mom's mantle.
That sounds crazy. What do you mean by the four sides of personalization? So you could have your images or text, whatever you want, on all the different sides then?
Whatever you want. I have 10,000 backgrounds and 9,000-ish pieces of graphic art. We can put all of that. Or I can take a picture of you, put it on one side in whatever word fonts you want, scriptures if you want it. Heck, if you want to put, the Nike logo, just do it. I'll put it on there. I don't care. Whatever honors you properly, that's what we're going to put on there.
That's cool. That's interesting. And gives a family another option, and that's pretty cool. I want to hear more about maybe your experience, like in the other aspects of funeral service. Did you feel like once you got into working for SCI, were you like, this is where I belong? Like I need to be back in the funeral space. Like, is that why you kind of bounce around from different in this realm, or is it more so that you've made these connections over these years and now it's just the best fit for you?
I'll say this: working in the nightclubs and doing all of that stuff, being around alcohol and drugs and that type of life, that doesn't fit my moralistic views, right. Mm-hmm. It was tough to wake up at 8 p.m and work till 8 a.m knowing that, am I going to get thrown up on today? Am I going to see drugs today? Am I going to have to stop someone from being assaulted? It was
after that.
It was a complete different type of stress that I never want to go through ever again. Right.
Yeah.
Working in the fitness industry, it was like, oh yeah, I'm going through this too. I'm trying to lose weight. I'm trying to be healthy. I'm trying to fix my spine. Let me help you. And for those people who had similar goals, I was 100% about that, but there was something missing because it's still a gym. When bro is the most common word you hear on a conference call, bro, how many ships did you rip today? Ships were memberships. I mean, it was a frat house, right? I mean, it was great. Yeah. I learned a lot about sales. It was very, very Grant Cardone-esque, which not to downplay the dude's a millionaire. Yeah. He's doing great things. Yeah. But, I wanted a sense of professionalism once I hit 30,
Sure.
I wanted to do something. I wanted a life too, When I walked into my first day at SCI, March 16th of 2014, it was actually the sales summit down in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I drove down 6 hours with my boss, who luckily was a friend beforehand, otherwise it might have been weird. That morning, I found out that we were going to have a baby. So my mind was already racing. I met with the market director, the person above the market director. And we all went to dinner, kind of talked about it. And the next day they're like, listen, we have an open spot in Louisiana, but there are a couple people who are underperforming. We might do some shifting. So when I walked in, every sales manager hated me because they knew I was there to either replace someone or fill this void where no one was successful.
Right. Yep.
And once the first day got done and it was, they kind of felt me out, it got a little bit lighter. The second day, they brought in the chief of police for Little Rock to give a pep talk. And you'll appreciate this because as he's talking how he doesn't know funeral industry, he's like, but you know what I know? I know basketball. And I can name every single player who ever played with Michael Jordan. I'm like,
there you go.
He starts naming up, Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman, but you might not know the lesser known players. And I'm like, who? Luke Longley and PJ Brown? And I go, finally, something I know. And it got a huge laugh. It de-escalated and everybody let me in. And the second they let me in, it's like, this is what it was like with my uncles. We'll give you crap, but we're going to pick you up. We're going to coach you. Because if you make a mistake, that makes all of us look bad. So everyone's lifting each other up, right?
Yeah.
It's that altruism that exists, whether we talk about it or not, it exists. Nobody wants
anyone
else to fail. Yes, it's the dynamic. Let's pick everyone up. Let's make everyone better. That's what I was missing.
Yeah. I love that. That's a super cool story and very true. And I think that's part of the funeral industry overall is growing more in that way too, in my opinion, where we're all trying to better each other. When I was growing up, it's the competition. They were enemies for us back in the day. I don't know if it was the same thing for you guys growing up, but for us, it definitely was. Like, my dad knows it too, and my uncles and my grandfather would have said the same thing. And nowadays, it just seems very different. People are working together because it benefits everyone. End of the day, obviously, you're still going to do your best to get every call you can in your community. But maybe besides that, even then, I still think you can work together. Besides that, everyone is all doing the same thing. We're all trying to improve in order to help families as best we can.
Yeah.
So I like that. That's something that I've really enjoyed seeing, especially, you know, the past couple of years doing more of this stuff, you know, on the wider scale as opposed to directing funerals and being in the prep room, not as much. It's been cool to see that shift that's going on. I'm sure you get to see that a lot because you get to go to a bunch of conventions and meet a lot of people.
100% spot on. But back in the day, it was Hatfield and McCoy's, you know? Even when I was here in Kansas City, we had Matt Forestieri and Phil Zems, and they were with the Signature Group, if I'm dating myself now, and it was all fighting over market share. But the day they became Park Lawn, you know, I walk up to Matt every time I see him, and I just give him a big old hug, or I give him a little shove, and, you know, he's one of the nicest people I know. And he probably has the best hair in the industry. So, you know, got to love Matt on that. Phil Zems, you know, he lives 15 minutes from here. I invite him over for my birthday all the time, and or every year, I should say, not all the time, because I only get one birthday.
All the time, you know.
You know,
I celebrate every quarter.
All the time, and he's a good friend. Even though we competed and fought for market share, you know, I could talk about every single funeral director or funeral homeowner in this area, whether it be Larry or Charlie Pasentino or Ryan Cashett or all the guys who I used to go head for head that had a location within 5 miles of mine. No bad blood, no issues. We can go get a beer right now and be totally fine.
Yeah, that's the key. We're doing our best to grow our businesses, and we're going to fight for everything we can. But end of the day, we can leave that aside because we know we're all doing the same thing and working hard, and we know what goes on in those deep levels and how challenging it can be, which helps everyone resonate with each other. Yep. And as much as we're going to fight for those calls and we're going to go and get them, it's a good thing to see that it's improving in that respect too.
Yeah, I agree.
So tell me a little bit about, you go to a bunch of conventions. How do you enjoy that? And for people that don't get to go to as many, what do you recommend maybe for a local funeral director or something like that?
So I've been to, I don't even know how many. I try to just go to the nationals, internationals, and globals now.
Okay.
Because that's more of my focus. I'd rather my team be the face of the company and me just be the guy who provides support to them so that they can grow.
Got it.
There are some shows that do it right, and there are some shows that just do it for money. And I'll let a lot of people figure out which one's which for their own.
Sure.
But, you know, if you've ever been to the Ohio show.
Yeah, you told me about this in Vegas. You said Ohio kicks butt.
Ohio's
yeah.
nuts, okay?
Yeah.
You walk in and you are elbow to elbow the whole time. And they do it in the same place and it works every single, you know, every single time. Because you know you're going to stay at the Hilton. You know, you're going to go over to Fogo de Chao or Texas de Brazil or whatever that steakhouse is across the parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have a cool reception, and you know that you either want a table dead center by the door or by the bathroom, because more people spend time in the hallway than they do on the floor because it's too tight. Right.
Right.
Then you have the tri-state, which is Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska.
Okay.
They started doing it every other year. Well, that pivot, guess what? Slammed. Because you know you're going to see each other every other year. You can budget for it. You can plan for it. You've got 3 days with your friends. You've got 3 days to get your CEs in person. You got three days plus one for golfing. You know who's going to be there, and it's easy, right? I know, because Shannon Hutchins is one of the most busy guys I know. If I need to see him, it's going to be at that show.
Yeah.
If I need to see a messenger rep named Shannon Hutchins, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to see him at the Tri-State for 10 minutes, and we're going to say hi, catch up. He lives 40 minutes from me, but he's probably the busiest man I know, you know? Yeah. The Southern's a great time. If you want to go feel a family experience, you go down to the Southern, right? Other than that, it's a mix. Like, Illinois has three shows, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Coin flip. What are you going to get?
Right.
You know,
right.
What are you going to get?
Texas. And I go to them every year, you know. It's,
exactly. You have to.
Yeah. I do like to see, you know, hopefully continued improvements. And I thought we had a great time in Las Vegas. I thought they did a very good job. And hopefully it continues down that trend for funeral directors to get an experience out of it. That's more than just like, I'm here to sit on my phone and get three CE hours and call it a day. And I think we can do more than that. And that's the goal of these, is to interact with people in the community, to figure out how we can best run our businesses and how we can best help families.
Right. If you ever get the chance, go out to NAFD. It's in Stoneleigh Park, England.
Okay.
They do it every year or every other year. And they take over an old polo grounds.
Oh.
It's literally three times what NFDA was in Vegas. That's how big it is.
Dang.
Plus the parking lot is, and their service vehicles, their hearses are totally different than ours. It's all windows, yeah. Right? It's totally, they still have coffins and caskets. So you have to pick over there. But because it's 3 days every other year, it's always in the same place. And it's incorporating, you know, the United Kingdom.
Right.
There's 16,000 people, I think, last time I went.
Oh, my goodness.
It's bedlam, man. It's bedlam.
Wow, that sounds like a good one. I'm going to have to check that out. I was just in England this past March. I was there for a bit. So I loved it. It was a good time, and it was very nice. All right, I want to ask you one more question before I let you go. I want to know some sort of trend in the funeral industry that you see. You're in it. You're in the weeds a lot. I'd like to see, to know where you think the industry is going in some respect, or a trend that you see that you're harping on, people getting aboard of, something like that.
So what I'm hearing a lot of, the more condensed of an area that you come from, the higher the cremation rates seem to be spiking. This phrase I've heard for years, and I'm seeing it more and more, but it's the longer the driveway, the shorter the bill. It seems like the people who are very obsessed with money and have gotten away from values are like, just give me the $600 direct cremation. I don't care. Put it in corrugated cardboard, whatever. Yeah. You know, if there's no love, there's no service, right? If there's no care, there's no service. Whereas in the exact opposite, you go down to Springfield or Branson, Missouri, or you go out to Abilene, Texas, where it's still good old boys and very, mm-hmm. very, 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 very traditional values. It's like 90% traditional burial there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how the geographic locations, as well as the fiscal responsibilities per person, are almost inverse what you would expect.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I've noticed the same thing too. It doesn't really make sense sometimes, but you know, it's not our job to change how people are perceiving or what they're doing. It's just to give them, you know, what we can and provide them what we can. What would you suggest for a funeral home that is struggling in that respect, where they're getting people coming in to lowball, nickel and dime you, or going for direct cremations and direct cremation heavy? Do you have any thoughts on that, or any recommendations or things that you're seeing that are helping as far as those services?
I mean, realistically, with those people, you're going to deal with a power personality that just wants to drive everything based off price. You need to figure out either a way to lower your cost of goods so that you can compete with some of the big market providers that have, you know, 20 retorts and they don't have the issue of doing quantity. You have to find a way to provide quality and value. Shameless plug here would be doing a fully customized urn that costs like urns. But you have to find a way to change that mentality, right? because if there is no love, it's not going to happen. And the one phrase that I've always used for the people who have ever asked me, well, how much is the cheapest thing you have? Yep. It's remember this whenever you're talking to a family. I don't want you to leave here without all the options, because there's going to be two questions you can't answer. Did I do the right thing? And did I do what they have wanted?
Ooh, that's deep. That's beautiful. I think everyone can use that, because we all know that you're going to get those calls, and they happen now more frequently than in the past too.
Absolutely.
And it's just a simple fact. And you're just giving them the options. You're showing them the opportunities that they have, and they're framing it, because maybe in someone's position, they're being short-sighted, and they want, to be honest, they're going for the money. They want their inheritance or whatever it is. And they're like, they're not thinking about what their loved one possibly would have wanted, or they're like, I just want to get this done. And we live in that society where it's blah, 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 blah. Sometimes it takes someone to give you a tough question like that to open up your mind and say, yeah, you're probably really right. Like, I need to think about what they would have wanted, or am I doing the best thing? That's a really valuable question that funeral directors can be asking.
Yeah. It's my favorite. I don't remember where I learned it. I want to say it was Jay Jones from SCI who taught that one to me. Might've been Mark McGilley. I don't know. Some old timers, somebody put it in my head. And the day it was asked to me, it broke my heart, because I was like, oh my God, I've never thought about this once. Every single family I've sat in front of, oh God, you know, it was one of those epiphanal damn moments, you know?
I want to write that down. So, and get it out there. People need to be using that. And it's not in a malicious way. It's not we're just stating the fact how it is.
Right.
And they need to hear, like, some families need to hear that and kind of knock on the door and say, hey, like, just think about this for 1 second. If you're coming in and you're asking for the cheapest thing, if that's what you want, if that's your wishes, of course we'll do that for you. But I just need you to think about that for 1 second. If it's not, you know,
just take a breath. Unless it's fully prearranged, you never have to ask that question, right?
Yeah.
You never have to think about it. And that's the importance of prearrangement, because it
takes. I was going
to
say, this is coming from pre-need guy.
Yeah, I mean, it is 100%. If you aren't pre-needing every surviving spouse that you deal with, guess what? Your kids have to go through what they just went through. Everything. Yep. So it's always the best. Make sure you get it straight from the horse's mouth. You don't have to worry about it. I mean, the day I found out I was going to be a father was the day I started with SCI. The very next day, I did my prearrangement.
No kidding.
I filled out the personal planning guide, knocked it out, found out how much it was going to be, was told if I wait till the end of the year, I get my employee discount, waited till the end of the year and did it.
Smart man. That's great. I love to hear it.
My uncle's frugalness that rubbed off.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Ryan, this has been awesome. Great talking to you. Great hearing about all your success and your stories, and it's been really cool. And I think our funeral directors are going to get a lot out of our conversation about where our industry is going, and some helpful tips of what to do in the prep room. And if you're looking for a special, unique urn to get out there and distinguish yourself, you got to check out Ryan's stuff. And it's just been great getting to talk to you. It's fantastic.
Ditto, brother. I'll look you up when I get to Chicago next month, and we'll go grab dinner.
Please do. All right. Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.